Hello and welcome to Inside Education, your weekly guide to education matters in Ireland and further afield. You can get in touch with me through Twitter at InsideEd, by email to insideeducation@dublincityfm.ie, or through the programme's website insideed.com. If you're an educator with a story to tell or an event to highlight, please contact me and I'll do my best to feature it. The annual conference of the Irish Primary Principals Network, the IPPN, took place this year on Thursday and Friday, 28th and 29th of January. I recorded some interviews there, which I'll bring you on the programme this week and next week. This week, I'm bringing you an interview with Maria Doyle, the president of the Irish Primary Principals Network. Maria graduated from Mary Immaculate College of Education with a B.Ed and started her teaching career in Holy Family Junior Mercy Primary School in Waterford, where she taught until 1995. That same year, she was appointed to the senior section of the Mercy School and became the first lay principal at Our Lady of Mercy Senior National School in Waterford City. It's a Desh Band 2 school. Maria has been actively involved in the IPPN for many years and is involved in providing courses for newly appointed principals. She is particularly interested in child protection and represents the IPPN as a member of the Children's Rights Alliance. Therefore, she is well placed to describe what it's like to be a principal today. When I spoke to Maria, I began by asking her to tell me about the theme of this year's annual conference.
The theme for this year's conference was a very easy theme to pick. It's 100 years of leadership, and it ties in beautifully with the commemoration this year of the 1916 rebellion.
What kind of things are principals talking about at this year's conference?
The agenda is very wide and it's very varied. Schools come from a variety of sectors. You know, you'd have small schools, large schools, DESH schools, special schools, and many more besides, different patronages and that. So naturally enough, everybody has their own agenda that they'd like to see put forward. But in general terms, there are two very key areas that it would seem that everybody is agreed upon. The first thing is, I suppose, the fact that principals recognise that they require at least one day per week to do the administration work that's required of them. Now, the interesting thing about this is that when we asked our membership in terms of this, not only did the teaching principals themselves say that this was a basic requirement, but the administrative principals also highlighted this as a requirement for their colleagues. Now, I thought that was exceptional, and at the same time, you know, it was expected. So that would be the first thing that people are talking about, the requirement for teaching principals to have at least one administrative day a week to do their admin work. The second thing is the fact that there has been such an erosion of the middle management structure in our schools, you know, particularly since the recession. It's been said many times during the course of the conference already, both yesterday and today, that the general can't lead the cavalry charge on their own. They need to have everybody on board with them. And the fact that principals are quite often the only last standing member of the team, apart from their deputy, if you're lucky, in your school, it's very, very difficult to work through new initiatives, progressive ideas, progress with good ideas, lead forward a good team in the school, lead a community without having that middle management structure there to work with, to engage with, you know, and to also delegate important areas of school work too. So there seems to be, in some areas, certainly politically, an openness to continuing that debate. We're sensing, certainly in terms of the extra day per week for teaching principals, but also in terms of the whole area of middle leadership, middle management.
The embargo is still in place.
Oh, it is, absolutely. We have said quite openly that, you know, we're not talking about a return to the previous system. The previous system no longer is valid, it's no longer fit for purpose, and we're quite willing and open to engagement around how that might be framed in the best interests of schools and of course of leaders, because things have changed remarkably even since the whole system was set up. In fact, I remember very well at the very beginning when posts of responsibility, as they were then known, special duties posts, I remember they were looking for jobs to give to people to justify them having the posts, like gathering the kitty, making sure the toilet rolls were in the toilets, things like that. Now, we've come a long way since then, you know, and I think that conversation needs to be had. But there does seem to be, there are glimmers on the horizon where that willingness is there to open that conversation, and we're delighted to see that.
And if that conversation was to be reopened, what would your priorities be? How would you see this new system working of appointing middle management for schools?
In the first instance, I suppose, we would be looking at the system having a short-term tenure. Now, when we say short-term tenure, we'd be talking about a specific number of years where, you know, that post would be viable for maybe 6 years within a school, and that post holder then, that for, and the responsibility that they hold, could then be renegotiated, and that person can step back if they wish or continue on in that post. And that would be one, I think, positive aspect of engagement around this. The second thing, I suppose, is around the changing demographic in schools, within the schools themselves, where it's no longer a case that the principal can lead all of the initiatives that are required in schools. I'll give you an example. If you look at the school self-evaluation model that's there now, that requires leadership and it requires drive. That doesn't necessarily need the principal to be in on every single aspect of that, but yet it's an ideal opportunity for somebody with a position, like a post position in a school, to drive that. And equally, areas like special educational needs, they're huge areas in our schools. And that is certainly somewhere where an individual with a specific maybe qualification in that area would be the ideal candidate to be the post holder in that area. So it's around being more creative around how the positions are used, most certainly. And also, rather than having this a position for life, I firmly believe, and IPPN believes, that there should be a tenure after which everybody gets to renegotiate. But the other interesting and telling point in all of this is that even in the old model, the boards of management of our schools were responsible for those post holders and for ensuring that the duties were being addressed. Now, I know that in quite a number of schools maybe this was being done, but also significantly there would be a significant number of schools where it wasn't, you know, where it was considered that, oh sure, they can get on with it and they're doing a good job and we don't need to be the overseers. In the new model, I think it would behove any board to be more proactive in this area and to ensure that the people that were in those positions and those middle leadership positions were and should be accountable to the board of management. Now, that could be through the principal, but most certainly ultimately to the board to ensure, I suppose, value of purpose. I think that members should welcome that structure. It would also, I suppose, complement the skill set that's already there in the schools. And I think that that would mean a huge shift and change for principals, and particularly for their current workload dilemma.
The IPPN stance is that you would like to have a limited period of appointment for middle management. What about for principals themselves? Would you favour a limited period for that position, and where it could be reviewed after a certain number of years as well, or have you a position on that?
We would have always considered that as good policy. In fact, we have a significant step down paper which we has come actually out of discussion with our membership, and this step down facility that we're advocating for is where principals have the option to step back from their position as principal, go back to their teaching role to reinvigorate themselves, go back to maybe, you know, doing something different without losing their seniority. Because at the end of the day, if you have worked at a senior level for a certain number of years, it means that you have, you know, justifiably a right to holding on to a certain amount of seniority. At the moment, if you do step back and you decide that you no longer want to stay in the position, you first of all lose your seniority in the school, and you could very well end up losing a position in the school. There are lots of reasons why this would work, and one of the most particular ones would be where there are certain hardships, you know, where people's circumstances change after being appointed, and they can no longer feel that they can give the energy and the leadership that they need to give, for personal reasons, or it could be for professional reasons. But unfortunately, right now, there's no out clause. Equally, and I mean in the same as for the appointments to these posts, if a review is conducted after a certain number of years, it does not mean that person has to step back. In fact, it might empower them more if they were to go forward again for another 7 years, you know, and be reaffirmed in their position. And that reaffirmation, I suppose, would be welcome. But in terms of anything in a changing world, I think, you know, we have to look at it more creatively, that a job anymore is never for life. Let's be frank about that. And the position of principal changes so drastically and so dramatically, and can do, that the position you are appointed to today could be a totally different position in 7 years' time.
We might explore that again in a moment, but just going back to the other point about principals in smaller schools having one day off a week, another proposal that I saw at one stage was where you would have a principal over a cluster of schools, and then they would be able to do some of the administrative duties. Is that something that you would still seek, or is that something that you would take seriously?
Well, it's a model that's out there. It's out there in Europe and in certain other constituencies where there are significant concerns around this whole area of small schools. Now, I suppose what you'd be considering there is a federal set-up. And not only in terms of one principal acting in a full-time capacity administratively between a number of small schools, but also a board of management. Whatever about the principal's position, you know, working around three different schools, we could say, or two different schools within a small area. When it comes to electing boards of management in a small rural area where you could have three schools within shouting distance of one another, it's very hard to constitute those boards because you're taking from the same pool of people, and it can become practically impossible to get people to sit on boards. Whereas if there was some system whereby there was a fluidity around governance between the schools, that would arrest an awful lot of the concern, and in fact it would probably be a far more powerful system than would be in place where you were literally begging and dragging people onto a board, you know, with resistance that didn't people that didn't particularly want to, but were doing it because they felt it was the right thing to do, maybe. And also, there's a shared skill set then between all the federated schools, we'll call them. I'm not necessarily very much a fan of that expression, but it's the only way really to explain where we're talking about here. Now, in terms of having one administrative principal, you know, to look after the needs and to lead the learning in a number of schools, you can straight away see where that would take a huge leap of faith from a school community or school communities. But it's not impossible. It works in other areas. It works abroad in other areas. And we just need to be more open, receptive to that type of federal. Now, it would have to be with agreement from the local community. I mean, there's no point. Imposition doesn't work, and we all know that. But if it was agreed, I mean, absolutely. We should be more creative about how we view and we look at things, I think, in Ireland.
You mentioned earlier that a newly appointed principal doesn't know what they're signing up for, you know, over several years because the job can change. Now, you've been a principal for a number of years yourself. How do you think the workload has changed during the time you've been principal?
I can honestly say there's absolutely no comparison between the post that I took up 21 years ago as principal teacher and the position today. And I think a lot of that was down to, I suppose, the enacting of the education, when the Education Act was enacted. Because there was a statutory responsibility on schools to comply with certain aspects of schooling. Now, that's not to say that those things weren't already in place, but once it becomes mandatory and once there's a statutory responsibility on any of us to do something, it does put an extra onus, not only on principals, but also on the state bodies like the Department of Education to ensure compliance. And ensuring compliance, it can often mean extra initiatives, more workload, because they are now looking at the compliance section, and to be compliant then they naturally have to ensure that the schools are doing what they're supposed to be doing. Now, I would also say that the pace of change, it's blown out of all proportion in the last number of years. You know, we've faced significant differences over, we'll say, the last 10 years. And I mean difference in the sense that we had a whole new community of people came to live in Ireland. You know, we have now got a diversity of people in our schools. That was a shock to the system. we thought we were a very inclusive, non-racist society here in Ireland. And all of a sudden we had newcomers in and we were shaken to our core, and we had to really step up to the mark and say, yes, we are inclusive. So that meant then that our schools had different challenges around the teaching of English as a first language. We had the inclusion, of course, which all of these were superbly welcomed, but we also had the inclusion of our travelling children in our schools. Now, it began tentatively, but it has now become mainstreamed to such an extent that the travelling community have a whole different attitude to school and a whole different perspective on what school has to offer. And equally, I would like to think that there's a greater understanding of travellers and their culture in our schools. We still have a long way to go on that one, but certainly the fact that children have been more integrated in our schools has been a huge plus. I suppose I have seen a huge change in family and the change of the makeup of family and the stresses and the presentation of children in our schools. You know, I would have seen where children would have been, you know, they wouldn't have had too much, but they were happy and contented people, and they were fitter, they were out more, there wasn't the same family stress. I've seen over the last number of years an enormous change in the amount of stress on very young children, anxiety, depression, that type of thing.
Where's that coming from?
Well, it's interesting. We would have surveyed our members a number of times over the last number of years and asked them, you know, where's the most significant change as you see it, apart from the academic side of things, you know, in our schools? And they're saying definitely the number of children presenting with anxiety, depression and other significant. I mean, you have children in primary schools talking about suicide. They are self-harming. I mean, I've been witness to that myself. I've been witness and I've heard children come to me in my role as principal telling me they've been suicidal, which is very, very worrying. A lot of it is down to, I suppose, the fact that the traditional family, as we would know it in Ireland, changed significantly. And even the nuclear family that we did have, that changed, because where parents were working, they had grandparents, but now the grandparents are working too, because they had to, because we were in a recession. So children were quite often left to look out for themselves in a lot of ways. And also, the family stresses that came with the recession can never be underestimated. I mean, I know that families do their best to keep money troubles, etc., from their children. It's not possible. Children pick up on those anxieties. And you had a core group who, I suppose, were never considered to be in the danger zone before. They were the middle income people, where there was negative equity, people losing their jobs, their homes, and the children in those families suffered enormously. And those families weren't used to the systems that maybe the more disadvantaged families were, and they didn't know how to access supports and that added to their stress. Along with that, I suppose, Ireland has changed socially. There's now more use of drugs and alcohol. It's become quite common, and we know that, we hear that every day on the media. And that has permeated through family life as well. And of course, the whole explosion in terms of social media. Social media has played a huge part in all of this too, because young children cannot cope with it. They're not able to differentiate, yet they are still engaging in it. And then we were poorly equipped to help them. Let's be perfectly honest, as educators, you know, in a sense, we didn't expect that they were going to be using social media to the extent they were and are. So the pressures on particularly young girls and boys too from social media has been enormous. So there have been a lot of factors. And then, of course, the World Health Organization has identified that we have over 350,000 children in our country classed as obese. Now, from a country that would have been considered very fit, very lean in the day, we've come to this. So we have to look at lifestyle and what we're actually ingesting. And you know what? Schools have been trying to manage and to work with all of those changes. You know, it's been a roller coaster over the last number of years, and it's not going to stop now. The one message I would give and I would bring from this conference as well is that schools cannot be expected to be the cure-all for every ill that society throws at them. We are most open and most willing to help and support children, no matter what it means, you know, whether it's in their emotional well-being or their physical well-being, certainly, of course, with their academic success. But at the same time, community and outside agencies have got to be held accountable as well, you know, and we're willing to work together. There should be more cooperation, of course. It is starting, but there's a long way to go still to make that work.
And is there much support for principals dealing with matters such as obesity or social media and these kind of matters?
I suppose in terms of children's well-being, you know, if you consider the children that would have very significant presentations in school, and you're talking about the children that are showing tantrums, throwing things around, you know, screaming, that type of thing that can happen, that's easily quantified. That's visible. And there are agencies, good agencies out there, like NEPS, the National Education Psychological Services, CAMHS, you know, the Children and Adult Mental Health Services. But it also depends on where you are in the country as to how good your access is to those services. And that's an indictment of any society, where it depends on your either postcode or where you live as to how quickly you can get your child help. But they're the visible things. It's the invisible ones. The child that's quiet, the child that doesn't say very much, the child that's struggling with self-esteem and all of that. That's difficult for teachers to deal with. I think particularly at primary level, teachers do listen and they're very open and they're very aware. What we've got to understand is that, are we looking after their well-being? I'm talking about the teachers. Are they in a place where they're actually able to deal with it? You know, have they suffered trauma that they're carrying with them? So we need to open the conversation around, are the carers being cared for in the first instance so that they can look after the children that need their support? And what we've been calling for as an organisation very clearly in the last couple of months particularly is to develop and to manage a culture in schools. A culture that doesn't take money, it doesn't take, all it takes is, you know, a willingness where everybody is open, receptive, to listen, to talk. You know, in Ireland, we never spoke about mental health. We never spoke about illness. They do it in other countries willingly. We didn't. Now, we want to develop that culture in our schools where if a child is ailing, a child is upset, they can come and say it without feeling that they're different in that. And if we did that alone, I think it would hugely enhance not only that child's experience in school, but also, you know, it would be tangible within the school itself that this school is open, this school is receptive. And I think we're well on the way there, but we have a lot of work to do, you know, around that area.
We've talked about how the job has changed, Maria. Has there been any change in the people who are becoming principals now?
Interestingly enough, I would have said to you a couple of years ago that there was absolutely no preparation for anybody stepping into principalship. I certainly had none. I was a teacher on the 31st of August and I stepped into principalship on the 1st of September with absolutely no preparation whatsoever, you know, whereas that culture is changing a lot. Now, we ourselves as an organisation provide preparatory courses for people who are considering stepping up. One is a course called Kiel Canaha, where people can just do the course, dip into what the requirements and the expectations are of principals. This is what you will need to know. This is what the role you will have to fulfil. And then we provide what's called a Head Start programme. It's a face-to-face for principals before they begin their role. Now, one of the most exciting things that has happened in the last year is the development of the new Centre for School Leadership, which is now based in Clare Education Centre. Now, this centre is tasked with doing exactly what it says in the tin. You know, it's being a centre for school leadership, not only for current school leaders, but aspiring school leaders. It's going to be like a quality approval centre as well for current courses that are done through different colleges, through different centres, our own, Kiel Canaha, where it is quality approved as being fit for purpose for what it is intended to do. But equally, it is there to mentor newly appointed principals, to provide coaching for people, not only people that might be struggling, you know, for whatever reason, for personal reasons, or because they could have taken over in a situation that's toxic, but for people that want to stretch their career a little bit further, but equally for aspiring principals. And this is a collaborative venture between the National Association of Principals and Deputies at second level, ourselves, IPPN at primary, and the DES. And there has been 3 million put into this by the Department of Education and Skills. It is a 3-year pilot scheme. So that's very exciting. So it basically means that the leadership agenda is well and truly there. It's no longer just something that's been talked about. There's something actively happening. And I think what that will do is it will empower an awful lot of people to dip their toe in and see, is this for me? Everybody needs to find out and to be able to ascertain, I might like it, but is it for me? And just because you decide it's not for you does not mean you failed, because it obviously just means that you have your strengths in another area. And it's very interesting that at a recent meeting of deputy principals made it very clear to us that they don't want to be seen as just aspiring principals. They want to be seen as good deputies doing a good job as a deputy. And, you know, it brought it home to me, you know, that it doesn't mean that just because you take up a leadership role in a school that you must ultimately become a principal. You would hope that the leadership in the school is such that it would empower and inspire people to do that. But it doesn't necessarily mean that that's the path you have to take.
Finally, Maria, you've been president of the IPPN since last September.
That's correct.
How have you found the position so far? And what are your plans for the future?
It has been a roller coaster for me. I thought I was busy as a busy principal. I have not stopped since I became president in September. I love the engagement with members. I love the fact that I can make a difference, I hope, at representational meetings. I'm at the cut and thrust of everything that's happening around leadership and around initiatives. I am there to bring the voice of the working principal to the table, because I'm there, I understand it, and I know it, and I think that brings credibility to any conversation that we may be having. I suppose as I move forward through my 2 years, what I would love to see at the end of it is where leadership really is given the priority it deserves. And I mean that not just for the principal, but also for those other leaders in our school communities that need to step up and should step up. And I'm talking, I suppose, governance, and I'm talking about even parents' associations, everybody, so that there's a collective responsibility out there for the best interests of our children. Because, you know, we used to say years ago, you know, it takes a whole community to rear a child, and it actually does, it really does, and it can't be just left to the school. It needs to be everybody on board. We've lost that a little bit in Ireland, and I'd love to see it coming back, you know, from the GA club to the soccer club to everybody having the best interests of the child at heart. But within those associations, there has to be quality leadership. There has to be, because otherwise, how are children going to learn what good leadership looks like?
And that plea for models of leadership for young children comes from Maria Doyle, who is the president of the Irish Primary Principals Network. She was a keynote speaker at the annual conference of the IPPN, which took place at the end of January. Well, that's all we have time for in this week's programme. If you'd like to feature an idea or an event in a future programme, you can write to insideeducation@dublincityfm.ie. You can listen to over 240 podcasts of previous programmes on insideed.com. Until the same time next week, this is Sean Delaney saying goodbye. Thank you for listening.